Hello, everyone, and welcome to Teach Me Teacher, a podcast for educators, where we, the teachers, become students ourselves. I'm your host, Jacob Chastain, and today we are talking getting kids engaged with science. All right, guys, I am here with a fantastic teacher and the husband of a previous guest on the podcast, Mr. Tony Moreau. How are we doing today, Tony?
Doing well, sir. How are you?
Fantastic. Finished out a Friday. As everyone who listens to the podcast knows, we record on a Friday after school. So we're always a little bit tired, but it's okay.
Yeah.
Hey, I had a good day today, actually.
Yeah, we tested today, so
it did you?
Pretty chill.
We did. I did team building. We're just sitting there learning about each other. It was awesome. It's fun times.
Indeed.
But today, Tony, the reason I have you on the podcast, as you know, is you're doing pretty incredible things when it comes to engaging students with science. And we're going to talk about several of those today on the podcast, everything from animals in the room to being creative with social media and everything in between. But before we get to all the good stuff with engaging students in science, I just want you to tell us a little bit of background, kind of where you came from and how you are where you are today.
Well, teaching was never really in my crosshairs growing up. I never saw myself as a teacher. And when my wife, Jennifer, started teaching, she was like, oh, you should totally do this. You'd be great with the kids. You'd be an awesome coach and this, you know, this, that, and the other. And I don't see it. Don't see it happen. I did have a science background, in college. I went pre-physical therapy, and my, whole life goal was to be a physical therapist and do sports medicine and stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
So that was kind of where I was headed. That's what I saw myself doing. And then through some curveballs and changes and stuff like that that happened in our life, I became a teacher about 5 years ago. So this is my fifth year here at Richland Middle School. It's the only place I've ever been. My first year, I started in a reading lab.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So we had a special program here at Richland Middle that was called the Read Write program. It was We had four teachers in a classroom, and we worked with four or five students at a time in a specialized reading program, and I was hired to do that. So I did that my first year, and then the second half of that first year I was also tutoring the eighth grade science kids for STAR, the ones that weren't doing so well. So I started doing pullouts with that. Second year, started the same thing, was in the Read Write program the first half of the year, and the plan was to continue the tutoring the second half of the year. But we had a teacher leave unexpectedly at Thanksgiving, and I kind of just transitioned into that and took over that class as teacher of record, and just been running ever since.
Plowing from there.
Yeah.
That's interesting. How was the, when you kind of started and they threw you into the reading lab, was that at all on your radar of something you might do? Or
No, not at all, man. It was, it's kind of a weird deal, the reading program, because it's not like anything I'd ever seen before in any type of education, you know. Basically, we would have the kids read, they'd read a paragraph or a page on a paper, and they would read it to the whole group. And then you would ask them, was that excellent? And if they read it, like, there was certain criteria for what excellent was. And like, it couldn't have any pauses. You couldn't stumble over a word. You couldn't, you know, repeat a word. It had to be just, like, conversational reading. And you would, like, totally put the kid on the spot. Like, hey, was that excellent? And they're like, no. And you're like, I agree. And then they would have to go back and read it again. They couldn't move on to the next page until they got excellence.
Yeah.
And so we would do that. It was really odd for me, because here I am, like, coming from, you know, a therapy background, because I've been in working in a nursing home for 7 years in physical therapy, to asking a kid if he was reading excellent. You know, it's like, no, you know, I don't even know if that was excellent. Was that excellent? You know,
you're both just kind of confused, talking
perplexed, yeah. And I remember going, the training was pretty rigorous, like to become read write certified was pretty rigorous, and they were on you. And I remember one day I just walked out because he was like, that wasn't excellent. I'm like, I thought it was excellent. You know, it's terrible. But yeah, no, I totally, the reading thing was it was weird. And then when I started doing the pullouts for the star science stuff, that was like when I like was like, okay, yeah, this is where I want to be. This is a, I hope one day a teaching job opens up, you know.
Yeah.
And it did. So
cool. So what is it about science that really that gives you what that reading lab experience did it? What is it about that got you into the physical therapy and got you into focused on the body and then, you know, now transitioning into that academic middle school world?
Yeah. I was a weirdo, kind of, you know, in high school. I know a lot of people say a lot of people were weird in high school, but my senior year, due to our block scheduling, where my year was worked out in high school, I actually ended up taking like two extra science classes instead of electives. I ended up taking another anatomy and physiology and then like a human biology class in high school. I just always loved science. It was the one thing that I could, like, you know, always, there's always something new and something exciting to learn about. And it just, for some reason, always like really gripped me. And then when I started looking into to being a physical therapist, the human body and the muscles and how they all work together and all that, it just totally like fascinated me. So that's kind of, I guess, how I felt was what I wanted my kids to feel, you know. And mm-hmm. You don't often hear kids frustrated like, oh, I just don't understand science. No, they get frustrated when, oh, I just can't read. And so I think that's probably part of, you know, why I wasn't quite as excited about being in the reading lab. Now, don't get me wrong. I cherish that time. I mean, I made some really good relationships with students. When you get to work, you know, four or five students to one teacher, you every day, you really get to know those four or five students. And, you know, they'd be with you for a couple of weeks, and then you move on to four. But, you know, that was – it wasn't – it just did, like you said, it just didn't hit it where I wanted to be. Now science, on the other hand, you know, you can they have more excitement about science. I mean, you being a reading teacher, obviously, you know that your kids aren't always excited about reading.
Yeah, I mean, it's a quality point, and it leads definitely to the next question I was going to ask, which is, you know, math and reading are the two subjects that get thrown around the most when we talk about kids that have anxieties when it comes to a subject. Usually those, you know, math usually I think probably takes the cake with everyone. Right. But then, you know, reading's usually a close second, depending on, you know, the demographic you're working with, their reading life at home, et cetera. But, you know, I was curious, just from your end, is there a weird anxiety with students when they come into your room on that first day, or is it generally an open book? I mean, what are kids like when they come in to that science class? Do you feel them pushing against you, or?
No, I mean, with my wife being a math teacher, I totally see the frustration and stuff like that from those kids. You know, they don't really have a ton of anxiety when they come into my class. They're usually really excited to learn about science. Like you always hear, you know, meet the teacher nights when you meet the parents and stuff like that. And in the first couple of days when you're doing the get-to-know-you stuff, the kids are generally, you know, like, oh, I love science. I love science in elementary. Do we get to dissect stuff? You know, are we going to get to play with animals? You know, they always have, like, just so many questions, and they're just so open, and there's generally just a ton of excitement about science. You know, they don't really seem too apprehensive about it. Now, when we start getting into some of the stuff, they get a little bit more, but at the very beginning, before they, you know what seventh grade science is going to be about, they're generally, you know, pretty wide open. They're excited. It's usually one of their favorite subjects is what I generally, overwhelming majority.
Sure. Why do you think that is? What do you think, like, I mean, I guess at this point in middle school science, I mean, there's really not a lot of math involved.
Seventh grade is not a lot of math. There is some.
Mm-hmm.
I think sixth and eighth grade deal a little bit more when they calculate force and they calculate some of the different stuff.
Yeah.
We do a little bit in seventh grade. I think the one thing that they really like is the labs. They're super stoked about it. They always love labs. Like, no matter how silly the lab seems to me as a teacher sometimes, the fact that they're like not reading a textbook, or they're not answering questions, they're actually, you know, well, even though there are lab questions, but, you know, the hands-on stuff, they really gravitate toward that.
Well, it's interesting on the sense that, you know, when you go to like a really good training, you know, they usually say, you get them engaged, right?
It's called, right.
Like, you know, get them engaged into the learning.
Yeah.
You don't just have them, you know, sit there and answer questions and stuff like that. And science lends itself to that.
Yeah, totally.
Like reading, like I have to try really hard. It's like, okay. You know, when you split up a story, I mean, you can only do it so much. So reading, you know, my engagement really comes from finding material that they connect to.
Right.
Math is always about, like, manipulatives or a fun way to look at numbers.
Yeah.
And you just kind of, I mean, Yeah, you get to do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, seventh grade science here in Texas is kind of the biology, kind of like pre-biology setup. We start the year with cells and learning all about cells, plants, animal cells, all that good stuff. The second 6 weeks is nothing but human body system. So we learn all the human body systems. The whole second, it's one standard 6 weeks. And then after that, we really like just dive into life science and really dive into, you know, all the cool stuff that's in our world, you know, from adaptations to genetics to, we start next week, types of reproduction. You know, some students don't even know that there's some animals out there and some species that don't need two parents, that they can just
right.
one parent. There it is.
It happens.
Yeah. And so like just, yeah. I don't even remember what the question was now.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. I mean, really, what's the fun of science? And that's, there's a weird, I wouldn't say it's weird. There's a great thing about science in that it literally, like, once you start learning it, it connects you more to your surroundings.
Yeah, yeah, there's always an entry point. I mean, there's always something that you can connect to. You know, whereas sometimes in math and sometimes in some of the other subjects, the kids are always like, I just don't get it. I don't see how it relates to me. I don't see how, you know, and with science, you know, like we're all human. So the human body system, yeah. they all relate. I mean, you know, just kind of the way it is. We talk about multiple entry points in our lessons and stuff for, you know, different types of students. Yeah. But I mean, just the subject itself offers so many entry points and stuff like that, that kind of, I mean, I wouldn't say it teaches itself because it doesn't at all, but, you know, it allows students to be excited. You know, some people might not like the cell unit. As you know, me personally, I hate the cell unit. when we get into adaptations, they can really dive into that because they really like seeing like why do tigers have stripes and lions have this, and you know, stuff that they've, you know, grown up being excited about. We could just get to learn a little bit more about why it makes those animals successful. You know,
yeah.
Why is a meat eater a meat eater? What makes it able to eat meat? What makes the herbivores be able to eat plants.
Do you find that you look at the micro scale, meaning like, do you look at the big picture when you're talking about science to them, you know, how it, you know, why, like learning about, you know, how we developed, how that connects to our relationship to nature and maybe why we shouldn't destroy everything just because we're hungry. Yeah. Like, do those conversations come up or do you keep it?
You know, every year I've had a different, not caseload, a different variety of classes. Mm-hmm. You know, my first year I had sixth and seventh grade and they were all like inclusion classes. And then my second year, I had like one or two pre-AP and then inclusion. And then like this year, I have four pre-AP and two on-level classes and no inclusion. And so every year, it's a little bit different. And so every year, you get completely just huge wide range of questions. Like, you know, the pre-AP students sometimes dive in a little bit deeper and they have more in-depth questions. Like they want to know more like why this is the way it is. And some of the other classes are more... you know, just like what, you know, just some of this what's and some why's. I really try to start broad, like you said, you know, just kind of start kind of wide open and we kind of narrow our focus down. I mean, based on whatever the standard is we're teaching at the time, whatever the TEK is, you know, make sure we cover that. And then whatever questions come up in between there, as long as they fall in line, we try to get those out.
Sure.
We tried a new thing, Mrs. West, who... one of your
previous last episode
podcasters, she started a pretty cool thing that I've tried to engage in a little bit. It's the students gonna ask questions about the unit we're on, any questions that they have, and then we go back and answer those questions and bring them back to them in a day or two.
Where do they ask the questions at?
I totally lost it what the website was.
Oh, so it's a website.
Yeah, it's web based. They have their phones. They just text it to we have it set up. They text it to a number, and it pops up on our end on the computer.
That's a really cool idea, though, to where, you know, especially for the you know, the pre-AP kids, or not yeah. even the pre-AP kids, no, but like the kid that's super engaged. Yeah.
Yeah. They would just, she came when we started doing the body systems and stuff, like, hey, do you have more questions about the muscular system? Do you have more questions about the excretory system? Stuff that, you know, you don't have time to sit there and answer 35 questions in a row right after another. You know, you do have to move on with the lesson and get on to what you're supposed to do. But it was it's a really good way that they can just pick up their phones really quickly, and they can ask a quick question, appropriate, obviously. And then, like I said, it goes flies through the interwebs and ends up on our computer screen over there.
Yeah.
We, you know, she pioneered that. I know, I think Mr. Whitfield also, he said he used it when he was teaching as well.
So poll EV.
Yes.
Poll everywhere.
Yes.
If that's what you're going to Google, if you're going to look this up.
Yes.
I like the idea specifically for science, because the whole thing of science is asking a question.
Right.
I mean, that's where science starts.
Yeah, totally. It's,
how does this work? Why does the world act this way? Right?
Right.
And that, I mean, I like the idea because I think it fosters that questioning ability that makes
yeah and the curiosity scientists. And that's what makes them enjoy science, is they can ask questions.
Why
is it this way? Why does the human body system work this way? Why does this work that way? Why does this animal have stripes, this animal doesn't? Why does this animal sleep at night and this animal doesn't? Whereas when you get to like math, why is 2 + 2 = 4? It just is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you know, that kind of lends itself to questioning. And that's one of the reasons I really love science, is there is so much curiosity and there's so much to learn. And, you know, I don't think you can ever, you know, quench that.
Well,
thirst.
Science is one of the really rare disciplines to where we can, it's interesting in the sense that, you know, we can have a great theory for something.
Right.
And for all intents and purposes, the scientific community can be, you know, all on board with it. That doesn't mean it's right.
Right.
That just means this is the best we have right now.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's really
in 20 years, if we come up with a better answer, then that'll the theory will change.
Yeah. Do you have that conversation with your students about, you know, how theories are like that, to where it's like, you know, it might not be 100% fact, but it's about it's as good as we have right now.
We do a little bit. I guess the biggest thing that comes to mind is one of our standards that we teach is the theory of evolution, the theory. And that's how it's worded. That's how it's taught, is it's a theory. And we do have that talk, you know, at the beginning, you know, this is the best we've got. This is, you know, this is the information that Darwin had. This is, you know, his conclusion, and this is why he thought that, you know. And, you know, if we come up with better stuff, if we come up with better information over time, things change. I mean, so we kind of...
Yeah, let's jump into it. Controversial topics,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
I mean, evolution, Big Bang, I mean, whatever. Anything that, you know, everyone knows about, which ones, even all the way to global warming and GMOs can be,
true,
you know, considered controversial topics depending on who you're talking to.
Right.
You know, how do you approach that as a teacher? Because, you know, your personal opinions versus what the book says versus what the scientific community consensus is versus what your students know as, you know, whatever, 12, 13, 14-year-olds.
Right.
So, like, how do you approach a subject that's generally seen as a controversial subject in science?
Well, you know how it is here in our wonderful state of Texas as far as what we have to teach. And they pretty much, they narrow it down, and here's the teak. And basically, I do my very best to teach exactly to the teak and what it wants me to teach the students. I haven't had any backlash, knock on wood, so far. I'm sure one day I will have some parents that don't agree with the theory of evolution, the Darwinism type stuff. It is a standard that we do teach here in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically talks about the medium ground finch that Darwin observed on his Galapagos Island. And basically we just, you know, I tell the students, again, it's a theory. It's accepted as a theory, and it's accepted as the best we have. And generally the students buy into it pretty well. I mean, we just look at it and say, you know, here's what Darwin saw on the islands. Here's the theory he came up with and why the animals look different. And that's what we go with. We don't really cover, you know, Big Bang Theory. We don't cover a lot of the other ones that could probably get a lot more backlash than just than what we do teach.
on a little bit to kind of how you're getting kids engaged, you know, in your classroom. You do a couple things. The first thing I want to talk about is your pets that you have in your class. And I know, you know, this has been like your thing. Like you're the pet guy at RMS. So what's what's going on with these pets? What's the whole brainchild behind this?
Well, it started off pretty innocent. It started off with a few fish. And if you look around, there are no fish anymore.
Not anymore.
I started off with a few a fish. And when I took over the classroom that first year, we found a huge aquarium and stuffed in the back room. And I was like, oh, that would be so cool to have, you know, a fish tank in my classroom. You know, just it's always kind of calming and, you know, the water running, you know, sort of. I don't know. I just always thought it would be cool. Just completely innocent like that. Just thought it would be cool to have a fish tank in the classroom. Mm-hmm. So that's all it was. And then somebody came to me and was like, hey, there's this really cool program called Pets in the Classroom. And like, you should sign up and see if you can get a grant for a pet. And I was like, okay, cool. Well, that sounds like fun. And so I did, and I got it. And I got my first reptile. And it was a crested gecko. And came the grant paid for the setup, the tank, and everything. And went over to the store and got my crested gecko and named it after Coach Dennis. Her name is Kiki. And
Dennis on another podcast. I was going to mention all of them.
Yeah, you know, just bring them all up. And so it started out with a crested gecko and some fish. And then one of my teaching partners that taught with me for a few years in my inclusion classes, Anton Ratliff, he started helping me acquire more and more reptiles for the classroom. And we've had a huge variety from poisonous frogs to extremely mean bearded dragons that we've acquired to now an extremely aggressive tokay gecko. And then people started, oh, you have pets in your classroom. Well, I have this bearded dragon that needs to be rescued. And so I'd acquire another one. And I'd acquire another one. And just recently acquired a tarantula as well. And it just kind of, they just kind of started, you know, coming into the classroom. And I've had to downsize a little bit just because it was too much to take care of. But yeah, the thinking behind it, though, is gone from just a, hey, it would be cool to have this in class, to using them to teach the life science and using them to teach the different things that we have here in seventh grade. We teach biomes, so we teach different habitats. Mm-hmm. We teach, like we talked about a little bit earlier, we teach some adaptations and why certain animals, you know, survive in different biomes and in different environments. And we teach variation among species. So I have two bearded dragons, and they're completely different colors, so we teach variations on why this one could be successful in this. And we get them out, and we look at them, and we look at, you know, the different adaptations. You know, I have a couple of them that are all the same species. So I have two bearded dragons, and I have two gargoyle geckos, and so we look at the variation among them.
Sure.
And then two more geckos that are of different species, but we look at, you know, what makes this gecko special from this gecko, and, you know, kind of how they get separated down through the animal kingdom. And it teaches, there's some real engagement there. When you say, hey, we're going to be using the animals next week for this lesson, you know, come up with some questions or some ideas, man, they're on it. They can't wait to get them out. They can't wait to hold them, look at them. Even though they looked at them in the class, I mean, we don't actually get to that unit until like the third or fourth, 6 weeks, but they've looked at them for 3-6 weeks, you know, 18 weeks of class in, and they're still super excited the first time that they come out of the cage for a lesson. You know, they're super stoked. And, you know, and beyond just the part that we get to use them for class and the learning from there, we teach in a low-income area. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of students that don't have some of the resources to, you know, have pets like this. You know, and I thought, you know, it's really cool, you know, to have these. And then some of these students would never, ever get the opportunity to, you know, have a gargoyle gecko. I mean, some of those things, I mean, go into the different reptile shows. Those gargoyle geckos are upwards of $200 a piece. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just the animal. then you got another, you know, 100, 150 per tank, and then upkeep, and, you know, 15 or 20 bucks a week for crickets. I mean, it's something that, you know, something that a lot of students don't get to experience.
Yeah.
The bearded dragons, those are pretty common. I have quite a few students that have bearded dragons now or have had bearded dragons in the past. So that one's not they still love them. Don't get me wrong, but those aren't quite as cool as the as the geckos and then the ones that can hang upside down and all that cool stuff. So you know, a couple different things. You know, just from the engagement in the lessons and also offering opportunities for them to take care of and handle things that they might not get to do without this.
I mean, I could imagine. I mean, you have, you know, all of our classes. You know, there's a lot of the time you're dealing with some type of a lifeless entity, right? Book or a number, and then you hear, kid, you know, here's something alive that we can use for a lesson.
Yeah.
I mean, I could just imagine their little, you know, the face is just lighting up with.
Yeah.
And I think the power of where that comes from is like a reconnection with, you know, because ask anyone, you know, kids are addicted to, you know, technology and looking at screens all day. You know, when they're outside, it's like just to get somewhere. It's not really to explore, you know, nature, this incredible universe that we have.
Yeah.
And then you have the opportunity to, like, set it in front of them and say, this is life.
Yeah, it's definitely cool. You know, I get a lot of comments, you know, from sixth graders that have my wife. Like, oh, I can't wait till I have, you know, you and I get to be in the classroom with the animals. And, you know, you hear that a lot. Yeah, I mean, life. That's what we teach in seventh grade. It's life science. I mean, it really does help, I think, you know. Start of the year kind of eases them in a little bit, like, hey, he's got to be pretty cool. I mean, he hadn't killed the animals yet.
Yeah. if a teacher right now is listening to this and they, like, it clicks instantly and they were like, I want to put pets in my room, what would be your advice on kind of starting the process of, you know, bringing this element into their science class?
Man, the first thing would be totally check out that petsintheclassroom.org. That I don't think I would have what I have now without, you know, that first, like, kind of little bit of nudge, you know, when I won that grant. And they do supplemental grants as well. You know, like, every year you can reapply and get, like, $30 or $40 or $50 toward upkeep of your animal, which is a cool deal. They like to see them, and they do habitat contests and stuff like that. But, yet, like, that nudge kind of sent me from just having fish to having, you know, reptiles and stuff. Another thing, though, make sure that the animal that you pick is something that you're not terrified of its food source.
That's because, probably a good point.
That's probably the number one thing. I mean, the bearded dragons, they do eat a lot of vegetable matter, you know, from collard greens, mustard greens, and butternut squash. That's their staple. But they do love some roaches and crickets. And so if you have an issue with feeding roaches or crickets or purchasing them and sometimes having them at your house before you get them to school, you know, that's probably not a good thing. The geckos, they're fruit eaters. So you typically just have to mix up, you know, a fruit mix similar to baby food. So that's not quite as creepy, you know. The spider, you know, that just touches on everyone's fears. But actually, the spider's the easiest one to take care of because you only feed it like once every month or two.
Really?
One cricket, and that's it. And, you know, then she does her thing.
Man, what an efficient animal.
Yeah, super cool. But yeah, I mean, if you can get past the fear of the food source itself, and you know, obviously, you know, the biggest benefit is getting them out and getting to handle them and getting the kids interacted with them and stuff like that. So again, you know, if you're okay with the food source, you also make sure you're okay handling the animal as well.
Don't buy a tarantula if you're terrified.
Tarantula if you're terrified of spiders. And if you're terrified of lizards, you know, probably a gecko that can run up your arm really quickly, probably not a good choice. But you know, like I said, most of mine are pretty chill. I've got one aggressive gecko that he's in a locked tank because he will go on attack mode. He hasn't done anything crazy here at school. He's nocturnal, so he sleeps during the day when the kids are here. So it's all good. We don't ever have to really encounter him. So, but yeah, you know, and then get the kids involved. Like, that would be my last piece of advice on the animals. You know, I had a reptile club last year or year before last, and we would, every 2 weeks we'd meet, and the kids would help me clean the tanks and help, you know, make sure the food was all good and mixed up for those animals and all that good stuff. And, you know, but that getting them involved, you know, really, then they really start to buy in, and then they get everybody yeah. else to buy in, and, you know, then you don't have to worry about the kid coming over and beating on the tank and you're like, hey, no, that's our class pet. You know, don't mess with that.
Yeah. Do you have any of that to where kids mishandle or mistreat certain things? Or?
I've experienced it twice in the 3 years that I've had them, and it's always been a student who did not start the year with me. It's always been a student who is yeah. new and who doesn't have that first week or two of the whole you know, relationship building and learning about why the animals are here and how they're, you know, they're living organisms, how we need to respect them. They kind of miss out on that. And, you know, it's probably a little bit my fault too. I don't really bring them up to speed really quickly on, hey, make sure that, you know, this is what we have to do for the animals. You know, you kind of, where were you at before? Where were you, you know, where were you learning? You kind of just get into that and you kind of let that slip. Probably something I need to do a little bit better job with.
I think I was thinking of that just the other day, because we had a surge of new students not too long ago,
yeah.
Everybody did here,
right?
And I was like, this year I did really good at setting up my, you know, procedures and expectations, and everything was going well. And these, you know, you get these new kids, and it's not their fault,
no, yeah,
but they come in, and it's like there is a disruptive force in that,
yeah,
and it's, you know, that is something to think about, is
yeah, and you know, I try to nip it in the bud, like, actually, it happened, this week, actually, I had a student, well, we're getting everybody started, he's, you know, getting his journal and coming back to his desk, and I look over, and he's banging on the top of one of the tanks, and, you know, I just pulled him aside and talked to him a little bit, and, you know, he apologized, and he just wanted it to look at him, and,
yeah,
you know, it was, you know, you want to think it's an innocent thing and not super malicious, but generally, you know, I don't have, the kids really love them, and then they really want that opportunity, you know, and they know it's a privilege to have these in the room, because I'm the only teacher here in the science rooms that have the pets in here.
Do you share them? Do you use, when they want to use them in for your partners at all? Do they take part in that?
You know, it's never been brought up. I don't know how Melissa feels about the animals, to be honest.
If y'all want to know Melissa's personality, just go back and listen to the last episode.
Yeah, we don't have many meetings in here. They're not as bad. I had a teaching partner 2 years ago before Melissa joined me in seventh grade, and she was absolutely terrified of all things animals in my room, and she would not come in my classroom. If she had a question, she would knock on the door, and I would have to come to the door and talk to her. She was terrified, and I didn't even have like half as many as I have now. So, but no, it's never really been brought up. I mean, it would totally be okay for them. Actually, my wife has come and gotten Bob, the old bearded dragon, a few times, and he's made some appearances in some of her flip lessons.
Oh.
And she's taken him down to her room. It was a little easier when I was inside.
Yeah.
But he's really calm, and he's really good, and he'll ride on your shoulder all the way inside the building and everything. So, they're totally open to, you know, to letting them use them for lessons if they want to, but they never really have asked them. Never really come up. I don't know.
Here's a point if you're listening. You know, another question that comes up with the whole natural science and, you know, animals and stuff. How often do you take your class outside, just out of curiosity? How often do you use the natural, you know, we're at a school, so it's not like we have a forest around here.
Yeah. It's funny you said there's a unit coming up where we go and we look at, we kind of mark off a spot, you know, like a 10 by 10 or we just kind of use the courtyard basically. Mm-hmm. And like, okay, you have 5 minutes, find as many examples of life that you can find, like biodiversity. So just looking at like grass and weeds and, you know, we don't live in a forest.
Yeah.
We have a few bushes around the corner.
The wild bushes.
Yeah. A few bushes. And when we do that, it's usually springtime. So there's a few little flowers kind of sprouting up, and but they sit there and they look really close, and then they see an ant, and then they see a grasshopper, and then a moth, and they really stop and focus, and they start to see that there is, even in a small little courtyard, there's lots of different varieties of life. And last year they actually found a dead cat in the bushes.
Ooh,
so that was they're like, oh, I found a not living organism.
Hey. But there's living things on the dead.
yeah, maggots and all that good stuff. Yeah, it was that was quite fun. But yeah, we try to go outside. First half of the year, there's not a lot of our teaks that line up with going outside and doing that sort of thing. But when we move into the biodiversity stuff and looking at microhabitats, which is one of our standards, and kind of getting to know like the different stuff that makes that up, and then we cover cycling of matter and so decay, and we look at compost bins and stuff like that. So that typically lends us to going outside. So we do get to go outside and use the natural world some, but for the other stuff, you know, that's why the animals in the classroom really kind of tend to help me, so I can bring them to here. You know.
Yeah. That's awesome. You know, I'm looking at your Instagram page. Yes. You got quite a few things on here. And, you know, it looks like you share some student work, you share animals, you share, you know, you were telling me before we started this podcast, you know, just some words and whatnot that you're putting on there, some vocabulary words in your little thing. So what's the mastermind behind Mr. Science on Instagram? Why are you using it? What does it do?
You know, it's that engagement piece again, like we talked about. Just trying to get them sometimes to think about science, you know, outside of when they're just in here in science. You know, when they're, instead of, you know, just thinking about who they're going to talk to on their Snapchat or whatever. Yeah. You know, if they've got their phone in their hand and that you can reach them and get them to think about science, even just for a few minutes, you know, when they see an Instagram post, you know, it can be that spark, you know, that spark that starts them down the road to loving science, you know, like I do, or loving reading like you do, you know?
Sure.
So it's kind of, I don't really have like a narrow focus on what I do with the Instagram. It's super broad. Sometimes I got this idea from Michael Hansen, one of our, technology guys who I worked with a little bit last year, and he's the one that got me started on this. And he gave me some ideas on how we can boost some student work. So you're doing a project, and you're coming around the room, you're checking, and they're like, "Well, I'm ready to turn this in." And you look at it and you say, "Is it good?" And they're like, "Oh yeah, it's fine." And then you say, "Well, is it Instagram good?" And they're like, "What?" And so you're like, "Oh, I'm ready to put this on Instagram." And they're like, "Oh, whoa, no, hang on. Let me finish this. Let me color in the lines next time." You know.
Yeah.
And so you can use it as a motivational tool, because I'll totally put up student work on there. And you know, it never has their name on it, but they'll come back to me. You know, like, "Hey, I saw you posted that my hand lab that we did last week. I saw you posted mine on Instagram. That's cool. Thanks." You know, and you know that creates some motivation there. I do. Some opportunities for bonus and extra credit, like we were just talking. We're starting a new unit on Monday, and I put up a word cloud for asexual reproduction and told them, Monday, give me as much as you can come up with, written down or typed, and I'll give you some bonus points on whatever. And so just to get them, like, thinking, you know, over the weekend, you know, I may get 5 or 10 students that do it each time, but that's 5 or 10 students that I wouldn't have reached otherwise. This is kind of a pseudo flipped classroom, you know. It's
kind of a
way that. And then, you know, just again with the pets in the classroom, you know, you'll see pictures of my animals and stuff, just doing random stuff. When I'm up here, sometimes on the weekends, some animals that they usually don't get to see during the week when they're loud and in class, they try to hide. And so when I'm up here on the weekend, sometimes I can snap a few pictures of them and like, "Hey, you know, here's a picture of all the animals that are out this weekend," you know, and they get excited to see that. And labs, you know, put up some of the lab work, you know, so first period's doing a lab and do a quick video clip of it and throw it on Instagram. And by the time, you know, 7th or 8th period's here, they're like, "Oh, I saw that on Instagram. I can't wait to do the lab." And so it kind of pumps them up a little bit and gets them excited about science and excited to be here.
Why was it Instagram? Was it just because of the pictures, or was it something specific that led you that way?
Well, I guess probably just because I can have the iPad just in my hand and just walk around and just snap pictures, you know, and it made it super easy and for me, you know, we all have teacher web pages, and you know, you can put stuff up there. But I just thought, I just felt like when we were discussing like different ways we could use technology and kind of relate to the kids, you know, Instagram just seemed to be the one I gravitated towards, one I was familiar with, and one I'd used before. You know, I do have a personal Instagram page, but I rarely use it. You just see a bunch of pictures of my Jeep on there. But,
yeah.
But I use the class one more, and you know, I just kind of, I'll have my iPad or my phone and be wondering, you know, as I'm making my way around the room when they're doing labs or they're doing different stuff, and you know, trying to get some authentic student work up there. And you know, kids, they really do get excited when they see that you have the Instagram app open and you're coming around, and you know, they're working hard, and they're, you know, they want,
yeah,
you know, it doesn't say their name, doesn't have their face, but their hand is there and they're doing something, and you know, or you know, they're working on their lab, and you know, they get really stoked about that sometimes. And so, you know, again, it leads to that nurturing, that love for science.
Sure. And you know, love of science, I'm gonna tack onto this real quick, because I had you know, when the science episode came up, you know, with you, I started thinking, and I was like, you know, there's all these studies that go around. You know, I pulled up some you know, just Pew studies that have been done about 2015, and like the difference in like science, or difference between like scientists and just casual people in what they believe, or what, you know, how engaged they are into science. And what I found that was interesting is that in college, we're graduating less and less science majors. You know, like less and less. We still have, our scientists still publish more than any other group of scientists, but right, we have less. So I think that's a little bit more of a political reason or business reason why we publish, yeah, so many things in America. But statistically, we're ranked about 30 in modern countries. And, you know, Turkey's above us with the scientists that we're cranking out. Yeah. So there's a disconnect at some point. You, yeah, know, in middle school, they're rocking and rolling. They're engaged. You know, what do you – and just, you know, throwing this at you, what do you think might happen to where people are get jaded from the scientific process? Or do you think it's a culture thing, or is it something that's wrong with – the education as you get higher,
you know,
and higher up?
I don't know where the disconnect would be. I mean, for me, I really dove in when we, yeah, I was so excited the first time we got to dissect something, and you know, moving on into high school, like I said, I took two extra, you know, science classes, advanced science classes, you know,
yeah,
instead of a, you know, an extra art class or something, you know, easy. I wanted to, you know, focus on that. I don't know if it's burnout, you know, if they just get burnt out of school and they just, basically, it's not just science. They give up on math. They give up on reading. They give up on,
yeah,
on history. If it's just complete burnout, you know, I don't. I know in college, you know, there was some times when I was like, I was kind of rethinking the whole, you know, physical therapy thing, because some of the advanced college classes for, you know, human biology and biology of aging and some of those other stuff where, you know, microbiology and get to college level, and they're tough classes.
Yeah. I mean,
there is you get past the, you know, the basic level stuff, and then it gets deep. I mean, there's some really, there's a lot of memorization that has to happen. I mean, it's fact based, you know, or theory based, you know, as we talked earlier. But there is a lot of memorization. There's a lot of stuff that you just have to know, yeah, and that makes it a little bit harder. And if you don't have, you know, if you're not completely bought in, you know, and you have a vision for what you want to do with it, you know,
yeah,
I don't think we breed scientists just to breed scientists anymore. You know,
yeah. Well, I think it's, you know, I think it goes along with, you know, why we don't breed, you know, people that read a lot. I mean,
yeah,
the national average reading level in America is 7th grade reading level. That's insane.
That's crazy.
Insane! Yeah. And I mean, that, and it's been like that for a while. And the amount of adults, you know, who read, let alone read fiction, is extremely low.
Yeah.
And that's, and I, you know, you see that trend through these higher level, you know, courses of study, you know, with literature and math and science. And this is why, you know, everyone in the government, you know, they talk, you know, we need to increase science education, we need to increase STEM programs, we need,
right,
to increase math programs and whatnot. But, you know, it seems like it doesn't, you know, on the Pew study that I'm looking at, it says that the scientists were asked, why, you know, is America losing their, you know, their interest in science? And they said lack of STEM programs.
Yeah.
Do you think that could be it? Do you?
It very well could be. I mean, Look at what our kids would rather do than read or study and do. They would rather play video games.
Yeah.
So maybe they're kind of going toward that more tech type stuff. But I mean, STEM would still kind of tie into that.
Yeah.
I know some campuses, some school districts really, really buy into the STEM education, and they have some really cool robotics labs and different stuff like that.
We had some, you know, I went to Richland High School, and I remember programming robots on some tech class I took.
Right.
And stuff like that. Are we partnered with STEM at all? Do we do STEM programs?
We do. We have Gateways to Technology here. Jeff Womack teaches that class now.
So that's actually a part of...
Here at Richland Middle, okay. Yes.
I didn't know that was a part of the STEM program.
Yeah, and they... There's a big... The only reason I know it is because my very first year when I took over for the teacher that left at Thanksgiving, that was my third class that I taught was his Gateways to Technology, STEM class stuff. And I got to go to their conference and see, you know, how it tied into the STEM learning and stuff. So
yeah, I'm thinking that I'm going to continue this question with him then.
Yeah, that's probably...
Cause,
yeah.
Because I do have him... He's on the schedule for the podcast. Yeah, so that's really interesting. And you know what? I think that's why what you're doing is really important. Like with your animals and getting kids to go outside and, you know, look at nature and getting them engaged, you know, all the way from Instagram to all this other stuff is because, you know, there is a culture need for scientists.
Right.
We need these guys. We need people to be interested in solving the world's problems.
Yeah,
and
totally.
And more and more we're having to look at the scientists and going, help. Because
yeah. Yeah.
We obviously, you know, we're just now learning the consequences of some of our decisions, whether it be, you know, what happens when, you know, a nuclear reactor gets broken in the ocean.
Yeah.
And, you know, to releasing... the debate of, you know, how much carbon is bad carbon for the atmosphere. And,
right.
you know, the yeah. list goes on, but we're having to turn to science for that.
Yeah.
And
we do teach that. I mean, that's another seventh grade thing. I know we talked a little bit about, you know, we've taught some of the things we do teach. We teach catastrophic events in seventh grade. So, you know, we do teach, you know, that, hey, this bad stuff happens. And like you said, we're going to need these guys to fix the stuff that we've messed up. I mean.
Yeah, it's really true. You know, sometimes I wonder, like, I feel bad for not joining that field because it's such a, I mean, it is really important.
Yeah, but they still need to be able to read.
It's true. Yeah, okay, I'll handle that sign.
You teach them to read so that they can read journals and learn more and then fix things.
That's awesome. Okay, so final question, Mr. Moreau. You know, I try to leave every podcast with some helpful advice for anyone, you know, listening to it, and they're just like, all right, I need something great, you know, conversation. I need some practical things I can go home and do now. So what would be some advice to you encouraging those science teachers who might be, you know, struggling to get those kids engaged, you know, just to step up their game a little bit and help them out?
Man, the biggest thing I would say is don't be afraid to try something new. Whether it's animals, if you want to do pets in the classroom, if that's something, you know, you feel like you could become passionate about, don't be afraid to try it. Gardens. We're talking about building a garden, just, you know, outside of our classrooms to show microhabitats. Just don't be afraid to try it. And that all that goes together to help feed the flame, you know, for some of these students that curiosity and that sort of thing. You know, just anything we can do to nurture those little brains and help move them toward scientific discoveries. I mean, there's stuff that still is discovered every day, and like you said, our number of scientists are decreasing, and you know, without scientists and without, you know, people who have a passion for science, we're gonna run out of things that, you know, that we need. Discoveries, like, I mean, they happen all the time, and you know, biggest thing would just be to keep feeding the flame and feeding that curiosity and building these young minds to, again, don't be afraid to try something new.
Yeah. Force them to ask questions.
Yes. Use that poll everywhere.
Thank you, Tony, for being on the podcast today. I really do appreciate it. I think it was a great episode, but I think it was an important episode because there's You know, science teachers, you know, they do a great service, just like math teachers and reading teachers and tech teachers and music teachers, everyone.
And teachers.
Yeah, teachers in general. I mean, we all need, it's all so important what we do. So thank you for showing us some helpful ideas on getting things, getting students engaged. For everyone else listening to Teach Me Teacher Podcast, go to the website, teachmeteacherpodcast.com, where you can get everything we ever do so you don't miss a thing. Subscribe to us on iTunes, hit that like button on Facebook. Wherever you are, put Teach Me Teacher there. That way you don't miss anything. Also, drop by, give us a review over there on iTunes. It definitely helps people find the podcast a little bit. And always remember, share this with your team. Have a good one.